So you're Andrew Smith, and you're with an organization that's called CAAT. What does that stand for?
We're a campaign against arms trade. We are against the government selling weapons to dictatorships and human rights abusers. And I think that the issue is being really crystallized this week because one of the world's biggest arms fairs is happening in Britain. It's happening in East London all of next week, which is going to bring some of the most brutal dictatorships together with some of the largest arms companies in the world.
You said something about your government selling weapons. Is this trade organized by your government?
Well, the government kind of presents itself as an observer of the arms trade, but actually it's an active participant. The arms fair itself is being co-organised by a government department called UK Trade Investment Defence and Security Organisation, which is a bit of a long, cumbersome name. But what it is it's the civil service body which exists solely to promote arms exports. This is a group of about 160 civil servants whose job it is to promote arms sales to foreign governments. Now, at the moment, government figures show that two-thirds of arms sales go to the Middle East, and the largest buyer is Saudi Arabia, which the last UK government sold over £4 billion worth of weapons to. Saudi Arabia is one of the most repressive governments in the world. It's doubled its execution rate this year, and the bombardment of Yemen has created a humanitarian catastrophe. And the UK has been totally complicit in this. And our argument is that by inviting these governments to buy lots of weapons, it's not just giving them military support, it's also giving them political support, and it's giving them legitimacy. And in a number of cases, it's buying the UK's silence as well.
So are those only British weapons then being sold?
Well, no, DICEY's a global event, so there's going to be arms companies from around the world who will be looking to do business. There's foreign governments from around the world who, again, will be looking to do business. So it's not only going to be UK companies that profit from DICEY and UK companies that sign new deals at DICEY and get to promote their wares. It's going to be arms companies from around the world. But the fact it's being held in London means that it's going to be the UK who it reflects most on. And we think what it does is underline the real hypocrisy at the heart of UK foreign policy. Because the government talks a lot about human rights and democracy. It talks about trying to create a better world, but in reality, it's more interested in arms sales and cozying up to dictatorships.
So there are people selling stuff there to the wrong people, you think?
Oh, most definitely, yeah. And some of the arms companies who are going to be there and going to be selling their weapons are countries who've been implicated in grotesque human rights abuses and have facilitated terrible human rights abuses. There's going to be the drone companies that profited from the bombardment of Gaza and the ongoing occupation. There's going to be companies like BAE Systems who are profiting directly from the bombing of Yemen as we speak. There's going to be companies who have made their money this way. And there's companies like Heckler and Koch, who have been a German gun manufacturer, who've been caught up in all sorts of human rights scandals as well. And these are the sorts of companies who are having the red carpet rolled out for them, and they're going to be put together with representatives from brutal tyrannies and dictatorships like Saudi Arabia, like Azerbaijan, like Bahrain, like the Sisi regime in Egypt, like the military coup which took place in Thailand. It's going to be these sorts of regimes which are wanting to buy weapons and wanting to buy respectability.
Okay, so that's why Saudi Arabia cannot spend money on helping refugees because they spend all their money in your country.
Well, yes, they spend a great deal. Actually, the UK is the largest seller of arms to Saudi Arabia in the world, even more so than America. When the figures were published by the Stockholm Peace Institute last year, it showed that the largest share is the UK, which has sold 36% of all weapons which have been sold to Saudi Arabia in the last 10 years.
So this is a yearly fair.
It happens every 2 years. I should say that UKTI DESO is involved in organising a couple of different arms fairs. There's the Security and Policing Arms Fair, which happens every February. That is to do mainly with well, what's referred to as security, but what it really means is selling tools which could be potentially used for internal repression to a lot of governments with extremely repressive police forces. They also organise a Farnborough International Air Show, which a lot of people think of as a family fun day out, because that's how it markets itself. But actually, what we know of as the Farnborough Air Show is part of a week-long series of events, which is based around an arms fair. And this is what they invest in, this is what they do. They organise these sorts of events. DICEY happens every 2 years, and it's by far the biggest in the UK, and probably among the biggest in the world.
So you're not happy with that, and I suppose it's not the first time you protest?
Well, yeah, there's been protests all of this week, actually. We've had blockades of the road to stop a lot of military equipment from getting in. But also we know that public opinion's on our side. We did some polling with Opinion, which is a research company, and it was a poll of over 2,000 adults in Britain, which found that 70% oppose the government promoting arms sales to human rights abusers. It found that 66% don't support UK arms sales to Saudi Arabia. 77% don't support UK promoting arms sales to Libya. So we've definitely got public opinion on side, but we need to make sure that people in the corridors of power know that, and that people know what's going on. Because the arms trade is a trade which relies on secrecy. It's a trade which doesn't like talking about what it's doing, and it needs to be confronted with the real human cost of the terrible weapons which they produce.
So they don't widely promote their fair, and not everybody is invited, I suppose.
Well, they don't talk about what the fair actually does. They promote it as if it's something specifically for the UK military, which it's not. In terms of who isn't invited, there are some countries which aren't invited. And there are countries who the UK doesn't sell weapons to, based partially on humanitarian reasons. So the UK doesn't sell weapons to North Korea or Syria or Russia, partially on human rights grounds. And that's fine. We don't support arms sales to any of those countries. But it seems very inconsistent to oppose arms sales to Russia on human rights grounds, but not Saudi Arabia, which is one of the most repressive regimes in the world. And it's a regime which, as I say, has doubled its execution rate, it beheads people regularly, it doesn't let women drive, and it's bombarding Yemen and creating a humanitarian catastrophe. What we ask is that no human rights abusers are allowed in.
So some countries are not invited, but I suppose you are not invited either?
Oh no, we're not allowed in. They don't let us get into it, so we might want to make sure that if we're outside it, they hear us and they know exactly what we're saying.
Did you ever get in?
Not to DICEY. There is, I have been into the Farnborough International Arms Fair before, because we do get allowed into that. I'm not 100% sure why, but I'm glad that we do. It's very interesting. It's a very surreal experience. It's kind of like being at Glastonbury, but for arms dealers. So there's kind of weapons everywhere, and it's just kind of very bizarre. There's just guns and bombs kind of set up as far as the eye can see, and lots of... It's all men. The only women who you tend to see at arms fairs tend to be handing out cocktails, but they're usually going about doing their business. And what was interesting about Farnborough was when I was there, at that point, the government was in the newspapers a lot, doing a lot of saber-rattling about Russia and saying that Russia, quite rightfully, shouldn't be getting invited to arms fairs. However, one of the largest exhibitors at Farnborough International was Rossoboron Export, which is the Russian state arms company and provides 80% of all the weapons to Assad. So actually, you were seeing a massive gulf between the rhetoric of what the government was saying and the reality of what was happening on the ground.
So your protest can't be inside the fair, so you are doing things outside? Are you right in front of the building?
Well, yeah, we've been right in front of it all week, and actually some campaigners did manage to get into the building this week and disrupt the setup of it. I think the security is going to be slightly better during the event. Yeah, we've been outside it and we will continue to be, and continue to try to disrupt the setup of the event, but also we are trying to get the message out to as many people as we can, as many ways as we can.
So the fair hasn't started yet. It will be starting on the 15th?
Yeah, it starts on Tuesday the 15th and goes through to Friday the 18th. And there's going to be kind of networking events for arms dealers and things throughout the week. And the government's going to be having its meetings with the different military delegations to try to convince them to buy British arms. So yeah, the event properly starts on the 15th.
And you are already in action since when?
That began on Monday, and we've had different campaign days outside the venue every day this week, specifically to blockade the military equipment from getting in. And we've blockaded tanks and things like that. It's quite surreal, because obviously all of this equipment has to be brought in somehow. And most of it, you kind of see trucks which are towing tanks behind them and military jeeps and things like that. It's very bizarre. But yeah, we've had hundreds of activists out throughout the week blockading the roads and making sure that the arms companies know that they're not welcome.
So, and what do they do then? They just make a big detour or...?
Well, yeah, they usually do a big detour, and the police have started to arrest people for blocking the road as well. But I think what we certainly have done is disrupted it an awful lot, and if nothing else, have cost them a lot of money. But we have certainly raised awareness as well about what's going on, because a lot of people don't know that one of the world's biggest arms fairs is about to happen in London. A lot of people don't know that some of the worst dictatorships and most unstable war zones in the world are being invited to London to buy weapons this week.
And do they know now? I mean, do you get some coverage in the mainstream media?
Yeah, we've had a lot of coverage from the mainstream media this week in Britain, and we're expecting far more over the week ahead. I think that the arms trade is getting more scrutiny at the moment, and we're always wanting to draw attention to what it's doing.
Does that mean that the number of protesters will be growing over the next days?
Well, I think the number of protesters is larger than it's ever been. We're having what we expect will be our largest day tomorrow, which is the big day of action, with the intention of blockading the entrances throughout the day, but also a good chance for activists to meet each other and to network with each other as well, because it's not just protests, we're also running workshops, we're also going to have international speakers. It's going to be a really good chance for activists to discuss plans, discuss ideas, and to talk about how we can make sure that the next DICEY doesn't even get to go ahead.
Aha. So those are all organisations that are acting against arms trade.
Well, yeah, but it's interesting because some of the groups who are joining us are groups from Egypt or groups from Azerbaijan or groups from Bahrain or people who are, or groups from countries who are on the receiving end of UK arms exports, because UK tear gas has been used in Egypt, it's been used in Hong Kong as well in the last couple of years, and UK armoured vehicles were used by the Saudi Arabians to put down the pro-democracy protests in Bahrain. So there is a real human cost to arms exports. It's not just in terms of the political support it gives the regimes and the silence it buys, but actually also to people on the ground who are being directly impacted and directly affected by UK weapons.
I thought that the participants in the protest would be European, but so they are coming from all over the world.
Yeah, and well, these are mainly sort of Bahraini and Egyptian groups already based in Britain, people who left the countries in part because of the disruption which has been happening. But there are people coming from all over, and certainly every European is more than welcome as well. We want as many people as we can, because the arms trade isn't just an issue for Britain, it's a global issue, it's a global industry. And while the UK is one of the largest arms-dealing countries in the world, so is Germany, so is France, so is the USA still dominates the market, so is Russia. So we want to work with activists all around the world to draw attention to what's happening.
You also have a Belgian delegation with you?
Yeah, we've got some Belgians with us at the moment who I think arrived yesterday and have been taking part in protests today. We had a petition hand in this morning at Downing Street for a petition calling for the government to welcome refugees, not arms dealers. And the Belgians joined us for that. Because what we are seeing is the government is turning away people who are fleeing some of the least stable war zones in the world at the same time as it is trying to sell as many weapons as possible into war zones. One hand, it's quite rightfully condemning the human rights abuses which have taken place in Syria, but at the same time is selling arms to other regimes in the region who are also brutal dictatorships and tyrannies.
What about this idea to start a fund that would be fed with money from war profits to help war refugees?
Well, I mean, we want to see money helping refugees. We want to see refugees welcomed to Britain, welcomed to Europe. What we don't want to see is arms company profits. I don't necessarily like the idea of linking one to the other, because I feel like we should be helping refugees, but I also don't want anything which encourages arms companies to make more profit, or if it makes the idea of arms companies making a profit any more acceptable. It's certainly an idea which has been around for a while, because there are people who take the idea that arms companies should invest in peace initiatives, which would be great if arms companies did invest in peace initiatives, but peace initiatives shouldn't be dependent on arms companies for their funding, when what we are fighting for is the exact opposite. I mean, this has to be underlined. If world peace broke out tomorrow, the arms industry would be one of the first to go bankrupt, because it's an industry which is entirely dependent on either war and conflict or internal oppression. There's no other reason to buy a weapon. There's no other reason for the sale of things like tear gas. There's no other reason for people to be spending billions and billions of pounds on some of the most advanced weaponry in the world, other than for internal oppression or external aggression, or to threaten their neighbours. So it's an industry which is entirely dependent on insecurity and conflict, and without those two things, the arms trade wouldn't exist.
Yes, so they are having a great time, because apparently there haven't been as many war refugees ever in the world as right at this moment, about 60 million. And who is this, this person who is responsible in the UN for war refugees, and who said that there is a dangerous lack of peace in the world, something... Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's completely correct. There's a lot of war and conflict in the world at the moment. There's a lot of arms companies as well who are certainly cashing in on it. But what we're seeing at the moment is the narrative in Britain from the media and from the politicians is focused on this idea of ISIS in the Middle East and to do with the prospect of Russian expansionism, and suggesting that these things are the reasons why we need nuclear weapons, and these things are the reasons we need to be selling weapons to dictatorships and things like that. So it's a real false dichotomy where, on one hand, the government is quite rightfully concerned about grotesque human rights violations being committed and mass murder being committed by ISIS, while at the same time selling weapons into war zones which fuel conflict.
I think I've heard all I wanted to hear. Is there something you wanted to add yourself?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think one thing which I should mention is the whole argument about jobs and skills, because an awful lot of the time politicians will justify support for the arms trade based on jobs. That's the case in the UK, and it's probably the case in every country which has a large arms trade as well. But the point to be made about that is that arms exports account for less than 2% of UK manufacturing. They account for about 1% of jobs in the UK economy. It's a very small sector, but it's a sector which carries a completely disproportionate voice in the corridors of power. It's a sector which spends huge amounts of money, time and money on lobbying politicians and has support from all political parties. It's not so much that it's a party political issue, it's an institutional issue. We want to see similar support and similar resources being put into green energy. And a lot of the jobs in green energy, what's needed is more engineering jobs. And it's the exact same skill sets which are used to produce green energy, green technology, as are being used to produce weapons at the moment. We want to see money and resources being put into supporting a growing industry which can create a greener, better world, not one which is just going to advance war and destruction.
So you already have an employment plan for people who cannot make weapons anymore?
Well, yeah, and I think that's going to be a big issue going forward, because actually the arms trade, while the amount of weapons in circulation certainly isn't going down, the amount of jobs in the arms trade is. It's not that arms sales are going down, it's just the way weapons are made is changing. So actually the arms trade in terms of jobs alone is incredibly ineffective insofar as it's been a declining number, steadily declining over a number of years. And these are very, very skilled people. We want to see them producing things which positively contribute to the country and positively contribute to the world.
Okay, that's a nice idea to end with. Thank you, Andrew Smith.
Thank you very much.